Welcome to another 10K Saturday. This week, Lulu talks with director, actor, and teacher Sarah Hankins. They've worked together over several theater seasons. And speaking of seasons, have you heard of Curator? It's a box of curated luxury fashion accessories, beauty products, and home items valued at over $400. But you get it for just $99. So check it out at 10kdollarday.com/curator. But now, 'tis the season of Sarah Hankins. Here we go.
And now it's 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 10K Saturday. It's the series right here in the 10K Dollar Day feed where we talk to people and then you fall in love with them and then you go support them and you go talk about other people with them and all this kind of stuff. We create a community. It's such a cool podcast. And it's part of 10K Dollar Day, which is a comedy podcast about imaginary luxury travel where Allison Burns and I spend a fake $10,000 every single week somewhere in the world in 24 hours. And if that doesn't get you, I don't know what's going to get you. We also have a second podcast called The Daily Happy. That is only 10 minutes a day. It is a wake you up, wind you down. We go through some headlines, but never the ones that stress you out. Unless we tell you, hey guys, there's something you need to listen to because it's going to stress you out. Either way, meet us there. Hey, I am here with a director, an actor, an amazing person, and a friend of mine named Sarah Hankins. Sarah, say hi.
Hello.
Hello. And Sarah, right now, is the interim artistic director and learning director at Triad Stage in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is where I met her. Actually working under, you were my director. You were my first ever director at Triad Stage.
Oh, that's right. I was on our event, Christmas Carol. And I remember seeing that you for the first time on a video audition. I was like, I like that gal.
Well, isn't that ironic? Because it's the only way we're auditioning now.
Exactly.
Actually, you know what is funny? This is a little full circle-y, and you don't even know this. I remember recording that audition tape because it was before everyone was auditioning virtually. So at that point, you still had to get kind of special dispensation to send a video for an audition. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because it just wasn't the industry standard at that point. So I remember recording that in the black box of Mad Cow Theater in Orlando, Florida, because I was doing 1776.
That's
with
right.
them.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to go into their unused black box to record the Christmas Carol audition that I didn't think I was going to book because I've never been cast in a Christmas Carol and I had to do a British accent and surprise people. Before 2020, a lot of people didn't cast people that looked like me with British accents. So I'm like sitting on the floor though, Sarah. I'm sitting on the floor doing a British accent in a black box with no lighting and somehow you cast me. So let's talk about casting. As a director in this virtual age, which is difficult, what are you looking for in a virtual audition? What can you see virtually that makes you go that person?
Oh, that's really great. And, you know, we're working with a lot of actors. I recently told Lulu that I'm working with a film studio in town. We're teaching students about how to approach virtual auditions. Of course, that's for film and TV versus for theater. But I think the thing that I keep telling my students and I keep going back to is I want to see you. I want to see your humanity. I feel like that's really difficult in the video world because we're so focused on let's just do these couple of sides. You know, let me see the sides. Showing that personality, just even the slate or
the slate. Smile during the slate.
Right. Like, let me see like the wonderful person that I want to spend 6 weeks with. Right. Like, I want to see you. And a good friend of mine, Courtney Morse, who was an Orlando actress as well for a while. She's great at, and I don't know if it's just for the auditions that she sends into me. She already knows me, or if it's like her industry standard, but she's always like, hey, Hank, it's really good to be here. So excited to audition for you. You know, she keeps it professional just in case somebody
else. But
it's
personal.
Just because of timing. And the thing that would always catch my eye would be the personality in the slate, you know, or the sign off. When I audition in person, I used to call it the Olympics because I'm sort of an Olympics nerd.
Love it.
Oh my God, I love it. So you know how in gymnastics they take points off for the dismount? You know what I mean?
Of course I do. Yes. Yes, of course.
And so my dad and I, when I would go after I'd audition for something in person and then I would leave, I would usually call my dad to kind of like detox, to just wrap it up, kind of like talk it out, because I am a talking thinker, you know, like literally if I have to have a hard conversation, I do it with myself in my kitchen while I'm washing my dishes. Anyway, so I would call my dad and I would talk about the dismount. And so like you see a lot of somebody's personality when they're saying hello and when they're leaving the room. And with video, we don't get to like ask you those questions about your resume or ask you questions about, oh, I worked with so-and-so. So somehow incorporating that in your audition, I find helpful. Now, other people have different things, but for me, I want to work with somebody that I see them, you know, mm-hmm. I see their uniqueness, their spirit, their humanity, and sort of can get a feel for their vibe. Because I admit, do think that I excel as a director in casting.
I was cast through a video, right? And I feel like the first day that I was in rehearsal, you were really honed in to like, I want to understand who you are. Like, because my role also had a lot of personality in it. So clearly you're like, but what is your personality? Because this lady's going to be a little crazy. And also you're 10 feet in the air. So we should probably talk about this. Also, do you do an Irish accent? And I was like, no.
No Irish accent.
But that makes so much sense to me for what you're saying. I want to break something down because we do have a lot of people that don't come from theater.
Right.
So when you say slate, can you describe to people what that means?
So the slate is the first section where you're just at the top of the audition. And in the rehearsal room or in an in-person audition, you would come in and you say, hi, my name is so-and-so. So great to meet you. You'd hand me your headshot and resume, or the monitor would introduce you. Hi, this is Sarah Hankins. She's casting this project. This is, you know, Lulu Picard. She's auditioning for Ghost of Christmas.
Present. Oh, present. I forgot who I played.
Don't steal Deanna's role.
it was in the past for me.
It was
so,
in the past, baby. But, you know, so that's sort of like, hi, I'm Lulu Picard. I'm auditioning for the role of XYZ. And for a video audition, a lot of times you have to add information like where you're located. I'm based out of New York or what have you, especially for film auditions. Sometimes you have to talk about your height because we can't really see that on camera. I was recently teaching a directing one class for University of North Carolina, Greensboro. And for the first 6 weeks, we were all on Zoom. And then my students came into the classroom and I literally didn't recognize two of my students because I thought they were a lot shorter.
Oh my goodness. That's hilarious.
Than they were. And so like this big tall guy comes in and I'm like, hi, did you just have the class after this? He's like, no, Sarah, it's Tyler. I thought he was like 5'4" and he was 6'2". So, listeners out there, you can understand how it's important for us to know how tall you actually are versus your perceived height on a video audition, because that can come into play with casting as far as like, you know, if we're remounting a show, will they fit in the costume, blah, blah, blah. So it's just a little introduction where you say your name, sort of your information, and then you jump into auditioning with whatever scene it is. And the thing is, I see a lot of people that go in for that slate, for that little introduction, and they don't see it as an opportunity to make an impression. Instead, they're just worried about the scene. And so
they're ticking the box. They're ticking the box of the introduction.
Instead of using it as an opportunity to connect. And I know it's really hard to connect to a camera versus a human, but it's part of the job.
This is not a new concept, though. And I agree. It's funny because I tell people and I coach them all the time, like, don't ignore the slate, use the slate. Or when you come into the room, and I remember as a young actor going to a masterclass with, I want to say it was Jeff Whiting. And I think Jeff Whiting, he runs Open Jar Studios now in New York. And he said the moment after the audition, right, is the moment when people, especially if you think they like you, they're double checking your resume. They're going through, if you think you've nailed that audition, so don't do this every time, everyone. He says he takes just a little longer to walk out the door. And he always says, he always pauses at the door and he turns and he goes, thank you for your time. And he said that normally at that moment, they'll go, oh, hold on. And then he'll get another question. I've always remembered that. And I know that my audition starts as soon as I walk in because they don't know who I am. They don't know who you are.
No. And we are on your side. I think that's something that is a mistake in casting. A lot of times actors really feel like it's an adversarial relationship. And instead, I am desperately looking for the person that's going to solve all my problems.
Yes. You're like, please just do it right. Because then I don't have to be here anymore.
No, I can go get a coffee. It'll be great. Or a cocktail.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the best worst problem to have is like when the first five people are perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, well, I don't know what to do now. Because we can't call it. You are now in Greensboro, North Carolina, but you've spent a lot of time in New York. You've spent a lot of time in Orlando, actually, even though we never crossed paths.
So crazy.
Here.
I cannot believe that.
What kind of artistic work most excites you? You have some great experience in New York. You have Orlando, which is very entertainment based, and you have experience at Triad in Greensboro, which is very regionally based. Like the programming at Triad that I have seen, a lot of it is even original content that is very Appalachian. So what kind of content excites you?
Oh, that is, you know, something that I think about a lot. And I find that this is really funny, but I find that my assistant directors actually have a better understanding of sort of what is exciting to me or attractive to me, or are really good at articulating my directing style, because I'm so in the moment of just getting in there, collaborating, having the conversations, that I'm not distant enough to observe myself or know my process. But they've been really great about articulating that for me and making really wonderful observations. And I've been really fortunate to have some fantastic assistant directors over the last 5 or 6 years. And so I've really delighted in hearing what they have to say. But I think that the work that excites me the most is heightened storytelling. Like, I'm always about telling the story as truthfully as possible. But I think a lot of times when we hear truth, we think contemporary realism, we think small box, we think living room. Whereas I find that truth can be expressed on a multitude of levels. Like, it's a dial, you know, like the work can still be truthful, but yet be farcical or heightened, or be in a design world, imaginative, playful world that you don't expect. And so for me, I really like to break open our expectations of what, especially if I'm approaching a work that has had previous productions or what have you. I really love to break that open and really ask, why this play? Why now? Why with this audience? Why in this space? I feel like you have to get very specific about where you are and who you're producing this play for and why you're doing it. Get very local in order to get more global, if that makes any sense, so that you can be very specific in what you're doing. I love physical theater. I love heightened language. I love innovative design. I love design that breaks expectation, like my production of White Lightning by Elizabeth Gregory Wilder. Most people would probably take that play and be like, oh, most of it's set in a garage. Let's be super realistic. Instead, I engaged with the designers and I said, you know, I don't want to be in a garage. And I was really lucky to have playful designers working with me on that project. And so the whole play was set on a beautiful dirt road that took up the entire theater space.
Well, the dirt road went up the back of the stage area. So it was actually up the side of the building.
Yep, into sky.
So you are obviously a female director.
Yeah.
In 2021. Oof. How do you think that's going to feel different than it has before the pandemic?
Well, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that a lot of the work that theater should be doing, should have been doing, and are doing will create more supportive spaces for women and people of color to do their work. Because I think a lot of difficulties and anti-inclusive practices have been illuminated and have been kind of called out, and people are being called in to make changes. I really hope that it's not just a change that we can say is happening as an industry, but that we can actually commit to it as theaters reopen. I think the proof will be in the pudding. And like any social change, you know, there will be a swing back eventually and then a swing forward again. But I'm hopeful that we're going to have more inclusive, more respectful, more spaces for female directors and directors of color to be able to do their work and to be able to do their work their way. And I think that's something that I've been reflecting a lot on, is that I am not a man. I approach a a theatrical space from my lived identity. And so I have to bring myself as a person into the room. And I think one of the struggles I have encountered as a female director is the expectation that I will behave like a white male director. That's not who I am. That's not my leadership style. Perhaps some male directors and I overlap in our styles or what have you. But I think one of the things that I bring to my rehearsal space is a lot of me, which means that there's a lot of play. There's a lot of dismantling of hierarchy in the space. There's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of questions. And I feel like sometimes I've encountered from actors or from, you know, collaborators in the space, a resistance to my joy because it's not considered to be serious.
Or considered professional.
Or considered professional. And I'm hopeful that as we make spaces more inclusive or we start talking about different leadership styles, that there is space for people to behave in a way that is different from an older male director.
Yeah,
that's something that just in artistic leadership I've been struggling with is I will never be the iconic auteur, artistic director like Robert Wilson. And I don't need to be. That's not who I am as an individual. But I feel like boards, audiences, and companies really have to start asking themselves about what they think artistic leadership actually is versus the picture of what they've painted of what artistic leadership should be. I'm old enough now, and I think the pandemic has taught me a lot, that I am not willing to put myself into a box anymore for anybody else. This is who I am as a human being. I'm excitable. I'm passionate. I'm enthusiastic. I sometimes go off into intellectual land, academic land in my brain. But for the most part, I enjoy a messy playground of ideas and collaborations. And that's what I'm going to bring to your rehearsal room.
I love working with you so much. And it's just bringing it all back because I haven't worked with you in a while.
It's been some time.
I love everything you just said. And I think it is probably a lot of coming out of the pandemic. And I love what you said about leadership styles and how kind of avatar-ish our idea is of what that artistic leader is. Because I have found, I've kind of used the pandemic in the same way you have, is to kind of be like, wait a minute, I think I pretend to be a different person a lot. And so now I want to really figure out who I am. And I want to bring that person into those spaces because that person is now welcome in those spaces where you weren't before. So I find that I tamp down my femininity a lot when I am directing. I move differently. I pitch my voice lower. I don't respond emotionally as quickly as probably I want to because then I hold it back. So that's something that I've recognized in myself that I'm like, but I'm a girl and I'm a girly girl. So I think I'm just going to be a girly girl. If I want to wear a dress to rehearsal, I'm going to wear a dress to rehearsal because I'm not dancing. I can do that. But I wouldn't. It was like the Hillary pantsuit, but all over my body.
Right. Just operating a space. Like, am I laughing too loud? Am I having too much fun? What is the stage manager thinking? Like, luckily, I worked frequently with Terry Alexander, who is a fantastic stage manager that Lulu has also worked with. And he adores our kind
exuberance.
Of exuberance. Yes. And we are a great foil for each other. And I feel like because he is very wry and very grounded. And so I felt like we were always a really great pair. But I do recognize that some people do not find joy to be professional. And if that's the case, what are we doing?
Especially like sometimes we do things called comedies. And if you're not open to laughing at work, I have a feeling your work's probably not that funny.
Probably going to be pretty boring and sad.
I don't know how you will entertain other people with your laughter if you refuse to laugh.
Yeah.
Because I think you and I come from that same emotional space in rehearsal. I think that that play is permission for any emotions that you have to come to the surface, because that's what actors have to do in rehearsal. So play takes the barrier off, right? Like, no, I kind of need you to feel like you can be silly right now, because otherwise you'll never commit to this weird choice that might be in your head.
That's something that I see all the time. And I recognize was affecting my work. And I was really grateful to train in a lot of clown technique when I was living in New York City. And for me, that approaching everything from play really broke something open for me as an actor and as a director, in that if I can facilitate a space where people feel really brave enough to fail and look like a complete idiot, then we know that we've got the real juice going on. Like, we're creating a space where all ideas can be tried because we're not afraid or ashamed of ideas. And so many times my younger students, I see them struggle to really allow themselves to be fully present or fully there in a moment because they're so terrified of what everybody else is thinking of them. And for me, Clown really changed that in that I stopped caring completely about what other people thought of me. I just wanted to make the audience laugh, or I wanted to have a relationship with the audience. So that really broke something open for me as a director and as an actor.
Okay, we're going to move into some questions that I thought maybe I would surprise you with, It turns out you've got all the answers ready.
Oh, are these the 5 questions? Are we there already?
Yeah, we're at the 10K 5.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh, you really are excited. Her little fists came up by her face and she was like, I'm so excited.
I've been so trying cute. Not to prepare my 10K 5. Because
really,
I wanted to like reflect, but let it go and let it be spontaneous in the moment.
I love you so much. Okay, here we go. What is your spontaneous in the moment answer to the first question, which is Sarah Hankins? What happens in this spontaneous moment to be your obsession?
Oh my gosh, you know this is going to happen because it's been all over my social, but I am obsessed with beekeeping right now.
Wait, I don't know that because I'm actually not on social.
Oh my gosh.
I'm only on Instagram.
Lulu.
What?
I started beekeeping.
Wait, what's the process of saying, I think I want to start beekeeping to actually saying I am keeping bees? What did you have to purchase?
So much stuff.
Did you have to build something? Yeah, tell me
so
everything.
Okay, so my dad used to beekeep when I was in my 20s, and my family had moved to a rural area in North Carolina. And so my dad just pursued all of his hippie fan dreams. He got bees, he got chickens, he had a big old organic garden, you know, the whole nine. He loved it. Gentleman farmer, Greg. I would come up from Orlando or from New York when that happened and help him. Each time I would come visit, we would spend one day working on the beehives because he knew I loved it.
Wow.
I know. Well, if it wasn't winter, because you're not supposed to mess with your bees during the winter. So last summer, like many artists, I was convinced that I probably wouldn't have a job very soon. I have gracefully and happily been employed throughout the pandemic. But I talked with my mom about what would I do if I was laid off. And we decided that I would move home. And at that point, I started to ask questions, like all of us, about work-life balance and things that I've never pursued because I've never had time because I work in an industry that expects me to work 80 hours a week without going home. And so I was like, you know, I've always wanted to really do the bees. And my mom had all of the beekeeping equipment left over from my dad.
Such a pandemic story. I love this so much. You're like, yeah, I was working in theater. I moved home and I was like, what could I do to improve my work-life balance? And I thought, I'll keep bees. Sounds so hard. I mean, but you had all the equipment, so I understand that. But are you in the white net suit?
Yes.
I need a picture.
And that thing is so, Lulu, I'm here to report, so hot inside that thing.
I believe you. I believe you.
I joined TikTok because I'm fascinated with other beekeepers now, and I follow them all of those rescue
beekeepers. Are you part of the TikTok beekeeper community?
No, I haven't uploaded any videos, but I am a rabid beekeeping TikTok watcher. And so I took a class starting in January because you have to start keeping bees in the spring. So I took a class in January, and it was like an 8-week class with a local organization, a local beekeeping association. And then I got 2 nukes, which are the small versions of hives, to start out. And so I have 2 hives that I'm working right now. And let me tell you, Lulu, nothing has taught me more about patience, lack of control. I mean, because like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I took a class. I did it with my dad. I took a class. I have a book. But like, that doesn't help you when you open up your hive and you're like, what are they doing? I don't know. Maybe I'll take a picture. Go look up some stuff on YouTube.
Can you get your own honey?
So I had some trouble where we put a honey super on top of the hive to kind of get honey. See, this is me like learning. And this has also been me being like, you don't have to monetize or be good at your hobbies. You just have to enjoy your hobby. That's the thing that I've really come to terms with.
What a cool. I love that. You don't have to monetize your hobby. Allison, we're quitting the podcast.
Never. What would I listen to on my walks? That's something because I'm a perfectionist, not knowing what's going to happen. So I put in wax foundation completely incorrectly into the hive. And so I had to go back in this weekend and cut it out.
With bees around you?
Oh, yeah. Like, they're everywhere around me.
But you have the sauna hat on.
I've got the sauna hat on. I've got my little suit. Yeah. I've got my little smoker. And they're getting used to me. And I'm getting used to them. And so we were able to harvest, because I had to take out some frames in order to fix my mistake. We were able to harvest 8 tiny little jars of comb honey, which is what I like, which is called cut comb, which is when you have the honeycomb in the jar.
I love that.
My favorite. So that's my obsession.
That's amazing. Are these bees on your family property?
It's on my family's property. We've got a couple of acres down in a very rural area, North Carolina. So it's also a good, great excuse for me to go and spend time with my mom, because they're on her property.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I hope a cooler bee suit is one of your wish list items, but what else is on your wish list?
Sadly, on my wish list is a computer. Girl.
Oh, no.
Girl.
Is it dying?
Yeah. You know, we're on this. I have a 2011 MacBook Pro.
You know, it's 2021 now.
Yeah. She's a grown-up girl. We're going to stay together as long as we can.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's what you do. But are you having to, like, negotiate?
Oh, totally.
Daily? Daily negotiations.
Not so much daily, but definitely I would say every 2 weeks we have a little crisis. And when I was recording a play series, I'm doing an online play series with Triad Stage, and we were recording, my computer all of a sudden crashed in the middle of recording, and we had to go back to the beginning because nothing worked. And it was a tragedy.
No. So it's not just you now dealing with the consequences. I just upgraded my phone because I had to kind of do this quasi Wiccan incantation every morning to make it work for me.
Some of my apps will not update because my phone is so old.
Oh, yeah, same. I just upgraded from a 7 Plus. And so eventually it was like, you're not allowed to do that anymore. You shouldn't even have a phone. And then I would literally be on another app. And then, you know, when you call IT and someone takes over your computer?
Yeah.
It was like that, but there was a gremlin in my phone and it would open up my email.
Oh my God, that's
so weird.
But I'd
be in the middle of the game. And I was like, I can see the future of someone receiving an email from me that I didn't write, but it did come from my email address. You know what I mean? Like that whole thing. So then I just got a new phone. Instead of researching internet security, I just got a new phone.
It's probably for the best. Now you can update your app.
What would you do if you had a spare $10,000?
Okay. So in real life, I would buy a car because I'm driving a 1998 Honda CR-V.
I love that CR-V.
Oh, thanks, babe.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
She's still hanging in there, you know, but I know that that's not 10K worthy. So here's what I would do. One of my closest friends, David Gauci, and I have been wanting to go to Germany. I really want to go to this play. I think it's in Oberammergau in Germany. They have been doing a passion play, which is the story of Christ, for like the last 400 years. They started in the 1600s. So they do this passion play every 10 years. Well, they were supposed to do it in 2020. And David and I were very excited about going. I didn't think I could afford it then, blah, 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 all this, that, and the other thing. So they had to put it on pause. They originally started doing the passion play as a thank you to God for sparing their town during a plague in the 1600s, I think. Is what I think I remember the story is. Guys, if you're a theater history buff, go look it up. It's all there. It's been a while since I checked out the site. But anyway, I've been wanting to see this since I studied abroad in Germany when I was in college. And I've never been able to make it. And they're doing it in 2022. But here's the deal. You have to buy your tickets this fall or in the spring. So I would.
How much are the tickets?
So much money.
Like how much?
Like thousands for the whole thing.
What? For this passion play?
Dude, yeah. And the entire town participates.
That sounds amazing.
Isn't that fascinating? And so, like,
yes, it's fascinating.
My $10,000 day would be flying David and I over there.
Yeah.
Go see the whole thing. We're huge foodies. We both love German wine. Getting like the whole thing. Front row seats, baby. Backstage pass. We're going to have delicious schnitzel for dinner. I'm not going to have schnitzel. It's not my favorite. I'm going to have sausages and we're going to see the dang passion play. Dude, like they have packages right now. They're like $6,900 for that and like a trip through the Alps, you know? And I'm like, I can't afford that.
Oh, but it's a whole trip. You're not talking about admission to the play. You mean your experience would be $6,900.
But I think it's $1,000 just for the ticket.
Listen, guys, don't yell at Hamilton because this passion play in Germany is really outpricing the industry. And
well, for the good tickets, for the like front seat, baby. I don't want to be in the back if I'm going to go all the way to Germany.
I get it, but even rent reserved the front seat for the homeless, Jesus. Also in July, if you were ever to do this European trip, in Avignon, which is where I studied abroad, in France, in the south of France, they have a giant avant-garde theater festival. But it's like all off-fringy stuff. It's not anything that would be remotely mainstream. And it's all in the south of France. It's in this little town that is a medieval town. And I mean, I have to go for real. And it's very artsy. It's not on anybody's radar, right? It's not Edinburgh. It's not celebrities don't go there. Nothing transfers from there. It's literally just mimes and shit. All right, Sarah Hankins, if you had $10,000 to give away, how would you give it away?
Well, I would give it to my mom to pay off her mortgage because she's really close. And that would make her feel so good to not have a mortgage to worry about. But if I had to give away $10,000, I would choose a charity. And I would like to give it to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because my father passed away from a fast-acting form of leukemia from a rare disease called MDS. And they're making strides in research and clinical trials with different things. And things are getting much better for people, but would help more people. Some of me is like a gift of $10,000 is just really important to a very, very small arts organization or a small nonprofit. But I feel like that work is so close to making some big progress.
I like that you pointed that out because sometimes, honestly, if it's a really big organization, part of me doesn't know where that money goes.
Right.
So there's some hesitation there sometimes for me when I see a big organization, but then you forget like they do need all of these little donations to make these giant scientific strides that are so expensive.
I think it's important, like, you know, working for a nonprofit myself, I recognize that people love to give to people and to institutions that they have faith in or to groups that they believe in the value. And they know that their that financial donation is going to be cultivated and is going to be appreciated and stuff like that. And so, you know, it is really essential to give to smaller arts organizations because a $10,000 gift could make a huge impact for a small theater company or for a small museum. Or there's a great LGBTQ center here in town that would totally welcome that gift.
I'm so happy we're talking. I love you so much. Before we go to the happy, because you know it's my favorite. Oh, yes. I want to make sure everyone can reach you because I have a feeling everyone's going to be like, I think I want to work with her. So let's talk about where you like to be contacted. Social media, what's up with that?
Yeah, totally. Social media. I obviously have a normal person Facebook. And then, I don't know, in 2008, I made like a business Facebook. So you can feel free to reach me there as well. It literally is Sarah Hankins, director, actor, teacher. Like that's the name of the page. That's hilarious to me. You can find me on the Instas at my usual social media handle, which is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Bell, B-E-L-L-E, Hankins.
What's your happy?
Well, I have to admit it's you today, Lulu.
I'll take it.
You're my happy.
Oh, thanks, man. That's so cool.
Yeah, I was.
I'll be your happy anytime.
Only having a migraine earlier today and like procrastinating on projects, but now I feel so motivated and so joyful. And it was really great to catch up with my friend and just talk about art.
And hey, 10K people, the last time I saw Sarah actually was on our 10K driveway tour. If you remember the 10K Saturday with Michael Torek, he's also in Greensboro, great friends with Sarah and I both. And so we did our driveway tour. The first show was in Mike Torek's garage. And Sarah Hankins came over and you made something delicious. What was
it? Oh, was it?
It was
jalapeno
the
vodka?
Moonshine. Yeah, girl, you made moonshine.
Yes. Appalachia is a great place to be from.
And because of you, I know how to say Appalachia. I said it incorrectly for a long time.
Well, you know, it's sort of one of those litmus tests, you know, a shibboleth almost to know if anybody understands Appalachia or is familiar with it. And, you know, it's a whole thing. I'm glad that you know the correct way now. We love you up there in Appalachia.
Ah, thanks. I do know how to say Appalachia. I don't know what a shibboleth is.
It's a Jewish word that would tell people that they were Jewish without revealing.
Oh, like a secret signal.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Like Houston and Houston.
Yes. Oh, man. Didn't you love it? Like, didn't they have a Houston's restaurant up on the Upper East Side? People would always call it Houston's because, you know, they didn't realize.
Oh, the steakhouse?
Yeah. They didn't realize the national chain. Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And for being you and for letting us know what's in your head right now because you are in such a cool place to be at the reopening of an industry and you do have such great opportunity to have your voice be one of the leading voices. And I love that because I think your voice is smart.
Thank you, Lulu. That's very sweet. I really appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for being here, meeting Sarah. We hope you have a really great week and we'll talk to you next time. Sarah, say bye.
Bye, everyone.
That was 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu. And don't forget, with friends like us, who needs amenities?